It is Locked On Jazz for the 11th of May. Adam Silver speaks. Is there new news? Other leagues start to move forward. What can we learn? The Last Dance continues. We'll touch on that, but the biggest what if in Utah Jazz history will be our primary focus. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan. Today's edition of Locked On Jazz is brought to you by Built Bar. Love it. Having a great time with Built Bar. They have now, I just got my second order. They've become a staple in my life. They are great tasting, and you should check them out. Use the promo code Locked On for $10 off your first box. I want to thank everyone. We had a big week last week. People are tuning back in. I'm flattered. I'm thankful. I'm appreciative. So that's been great. Thank you very much for doing that. It's rewarding that we're still a part of your life. So thank you. Thank you very much. Daily DeVars are still welcome at DLock09@gmail.com. That's DLock09@gmail.com. Want to hear from you. Daily DeVars are the things that remind you of why you're a Jazz fan or a sports fan. Share those kind of moments with us. All right, so Adam, a lot of news to cover, and then we'll do what if. We're going to do what ifs in Utah Jazz history this week. And next week, so we'll run through a bunch of what-ifs. If you have any what-ifs you want to share, feel free to email me at dlock09@gmail.com. All right, so Adam Silver spoke on Friday with the Players Union, big call. Was there a lot of new information? Maybe more, I think, a clarification of things that we've been talking about for most of the last 2 weeks. Let's walk through them. No fans. That there'll be no fans in 2020 for the whatever version of the remainder of the season there is. I think that was pretty well known. I had started to try to convince myself there was a possibility you could do something for conference finals or finals. I think I was trying to be overly optimistic, and then when I started talking to people around the league, they made it pretty clear that I was completely overly optimistic. So no fans. Now, what's the ramifications of that? Financially, it's significant. 40% of all revenue comes from fans. So that's a big deal. That is why I've also said that what I think the biggest focus of the league is to get the 2021 season right. And that's why, and he and Silver in this call basically gets to it. We're not starting 2021 till late December. It's your best fans chance of having fans. If fans are 40% of the revenue, you're not going to probably, without a vaccine, you're not going to have 19,000 people in an arena. But as we talked about last week on the program, if you tuned in and caught it, and hopefully you listen multiple times a week, please do. We're here for you every day. If you listened last week, we talked about that, you know, maybe there's a way with 5,000 fans, 25%, you can still get about 60 or 70% of your revenue. You're upping your price. It's more prestigious to have a ticket. It's a bigger deal. All those kind of things, maybe not, but maybe. And if you can find a way to do that in the short term, is to, you know, garner, then you know you're 60% of 40%. You're not, you know, that gets a little bit better for the financial realm of this. But I, you know, it was Adam Silver said he, you know, we have many teams that are very concerned and many teams are crushed financially. This is going to be a landscape changer in the NBA. I think you're going to see minority ownership groups increase, teams needing an influx of cash. I think you could see franchise movement, frankly, if there's a rich owner somewhere sitting by and the vaccine isn't coming right away, you could see, I think, some franchise movement out of this. This is a landscape changing, world changing event. Like, it's not, I'm not breaking news with that. I thought no decision until June. I mean, it's clear we're going to have golf hopefully here coming up, though there's a bunch of hurdles they've got to be able to handle. We're not having professional sports again until at least July. And I'm not sure we're going to have a decision, unless baseball makes the decision, until earlier than that, until the middle of June. Baseball might play early July, which means they've probably made a decision in late June. Adam Silver talks about a 3 to 6 week ramp up. I mean, the 3 week ramp up means to me you could decide on July 1st, play July 22nd. Adam Silver also said he wants a full 4-round, 7-game playoff. We're stretching this thing out. But you start July 22nd, you run through September 22nd or so, get it all done in 2 months. And then from there, you move to your offseason and start in late December. We've talked about this a lot. So a lot of this, I think what Adam Silver said is clarifying things that we've talked about hypothetically or kind of surmised. Disney or Vegas or both? Disney, I'm going to guess, is gaining steam. I'm hearing that a little bit, that Disney's gaining steam. Bob Iger, Disney CEO, you know, pretty important client, also very close with Adam Silver. Great working relationship on multiple projects prior. You could see them working together on this. The NBA is working on a year timetable on the vaccine. It's an interesting, that's pretty forward thinking. And that'd be great. There are a bunch of little pieces to this puzzle, that still have to come together. The key to all of these conversations are, what do you do when someone tests positive? Henry Abbott of True Hoop, who does brilliant work, wrote something, much more dire, like, what happens when someone dies? Like, are we all right with it if someone dies? I think that's the tricky one in this whole concept. And what do you do about the 73-year-old assistant coach? Doc Rivers was on a podcast in which he talked about how he's not having one of his assistants work out players right now. Detroit's got a legendary NBA coach in Tim Gergerich, who... if I remember correctly, Detroit was playing New York right after they played us, and the Pistons had decided not to send Tim Gergerich on that road trip already. So some of these decisions kind of were being made in the midst of it. It's interesting on that one, by the way. We were in Detroit on March 7th. It's so wild to look back on all this and just the different thoughts and conversations and just kind of the intuitive knowledge that this was super serious, but not quite sure what we were going to do. Eric Waters and I, our trainer, must have held 20 conversations. He must have been so tired of me. It's pretty fascinating on all that. Some other news notes of interest. Mark Emmert's comments that no students, no games for college football. It's a big one. What happens when one school of a conference has no students and other schools in the conference have students and then can play games? That's the huge hurdle for college football. Major League Baseball participated in an antibody test, and only 60 of the 5,741 came back as having had the virus. This is a huge study. It's not going to have a lot to do with whether teams come back, but Major League Baseball volunteered to Stanford University what is probably the largest antibody study yet. If that turns out to be good numbers, I think we'll hear more about it in the upcoming week. That's not a great sign for herd immunity. That's actually, you know, for all of my optimism, and I'm still optimistic we're going to play in late July. That's the first time I've read something that made me want go, uh-oh. That one's not great. You'd like herd immunity to be, you know, the study that came out of New York about the pregnant women, they all got tested and they all had really, really high asymptomatic positives, allowed you to believe in herd immunity a bit more. The biggest deal here on all of this is, again, what I said a moment ago, is what happens when someone tests positive. Gary Bettman and Adam Silver and Rob Manfield and all these commissioners are on lines together. This is the number one issue they all have to confront. That's what they have to decide. Adam Silver said, without really defining what they would do, that the first thing is that they do believe that they'll be able to administer daily testing at that point. And so another reason to go late July is, you know, gives you, hopefully in the next 8-9 weeks, we improve our testing abilities. It's the key to everything here. What we're doing as a society right now, opening everything up is totally fine if we add the testing to go with it. Right now, what we should be doing is opening it up. Someone tests positive, they get quarantined for 14 days. You test all their contacts to check who else is. They get quarantined for 14 days, and then you stop the spread. Just opening it up without testing is really has a really big chance of a significant surge here in the next 2 or 3 weeks, and then all this gets put on the back burner. That would be my second reason of lack of a little less optimism recently. You know, I'm not, you know, I get what we're doing, but it'd be nice if we could do it with the infrastructure that would make it a reasonable decision. Right now, we're fighting science on this one. Economically, maybe it's a reasonable decision, but we're fighting science. That's factual. The key to this whole thing is, what do you do? They talked about, well, if someone tests positive, maybe you have a 2-day delay while you then test everyone and get the results. There has to be a policy of what we're doing when someone tests positive. That's the item that is entirely unclear on all of this. Today's show is brought to you by Built Bar. Built Bar is a Utah-based company that is blowing up the way you think of bars. They are having a fabulous texture. They're delicious. Healthy has never been this delicious. With Built Bar, you have an array of great, exciting flavors, super taste, and incredible what they call macros. Those are the numbers. Those are the health issues. So in other words, a Built Bar has 110 calories. If you look at the most popular men's bar, it has 250 calories. Fat grams, 4. Carbs, 5 grams. Sugar, 4 grams. Sugar, 4 grams. Most popular men's bar sugar, 21 grams. Carbs, 38. We all know to be healthy, we want that jolt, but the carbs and the sugar is bad for us. Sugar is a drug that is getting us, and we all know that. So what do? We go to Built Bar instead, and builtbar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON. Fun one I just did is I built my own bar. I built my own box. So you choose the flavors you want in your 18-bar mix box. You plug it in. You choose 3 flavors. They each come in their individual boxes. And I ended up, I think I took vanilla, mint, and chocolate as my 3 flavors. And I got a mixed collection. You also can get 15 flavors, 18 the pre-established mix bar, all at builtbar.com. Promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off. Get yours now. Today's show is also brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Murdochs are doing great things right now. They've been ahead of the curve. They're open. They're making sure that they have a policy to make sure that they have great social distancing going on. They've widened out their staff, where they sit, how they work with you, and interact with you. You can shop online completely for your new Chevy with the Murdoch Sure program. They'll bring the car to you so you can test drive it. They can do the whole thing at your house so you never go in. Or if you'd like to, you can go down. Again, everything's sanitized, worked. I've been working with the Murdochs on a bunch of stuff recently, and their level of detail right now is really great. Plus, at Chevy, GM first responder discount for all our healthcare professionals. That's going on right now through June 30th. Now eligible healthcare professionals get the GM first responders discount, which is just great. And then the car lineup is fabulous. The Equinox, the Blazer in your SUVs. I love both of them when I drove them. The trucks, we know about Chevy trucks. Chevy trucks are the best on the market. The Chevrolet, Colorado, and the Silverado trucks. And then obviously you've got the Suburban and the Tahoe. It's all at Murdoch Chevy, located in Woods Cross, also located in Logan. What if is our weekly focus on the Locked On Podcast Network right now? And there's the Jazz have one of the greatest what-ifs of all time. Some of you might not know the story, so let me back the story up for you. The Utah Jazz go to the NBA Finals in the 96-97 season. They win 64 games. They're great. They've got a super team. You got Stockton. You got Hornacek. You got Brian Russell. You got Karl Malone. And you got center by committee. Greg Foster, Antoine Carr, and Greg Ostertag. But there's a feeling that that's the position throughout this whole thing that the Jazz need a little bit more of. Now, interestingly enough, the Bulls are going with Luke Longley and Will Perdue. So it's not the Jazz are trying to find their edge somewhere in this. The 96-97 season, the Jazz lost in the NBA Finals. And now it was time for the 97-98 season. The Jazz started that year. Stockton was injured, his first injury of his career. And so the Jazz start that year a little bit slower. The other problem is that there's this guy named Hakeem Olajuwon that is floating around and giving the Jazz, you know, has ruined the Jazz lives numerous times before. And the Jazz have got to deal with him. They got by him the time before, but they know. So the Jazz start that year slowly. If you recall some of our stories we've had, they were 7-6 or 6-6 and 5-6 actually to start the year. So they're 5-6 to start the year. And then they click in. Then they just start kind of, they're winning, you know, five in a row, six in a row, seven in a row, three in a row, five in a row. They get kind of rolling a little bit. So after starting the year 5-6, they go to 30-15. So they're 25-9 in their last set of games. And actually 25-8 at one point. They lose to the Clippers. They then roll off seven straight. So they're really rolling. And at this, and at the five, the moment they've won five straight, they're now 35-15. So they are now 30-9 in their, the Jazz decide, despite the fact that they're 30-9 in their last 39 games, and despite the fact that they're rolling, having won five straight, on February 17th of that year, the Utah Jazz pull a pretty big deal. They trade Chris Morris, who at that point in time was really in the doghouse. He was not playing. Brian Russell and Adam Keefe were taking those minutes, and he was not playing. And Greg Foster, who had been in and out of the lineup all year. And actually, at the most recent time, Ostertag had been banged up, and Foster's time had gotten a little limited, even though Ostertag was beat up. And the Jazz went on the market on the trade deadline and traded Greg Foster, as well as the Jazz had just come off like a 20-point win off the against the Sonics in a pretty big game. Foster had actually played 28 minutes that night. Ostertag had been hurt, as I mentioned. Foster started that game. He fouled out. But the Jazz had a 20-point road win in, I think it was a road win, in Seattle. I mean, mammoth win. That was a good Seattle team, other than that they had signed Jim McElvay in the offseason. That kind of messed things up. But that was one of the better teams. And they traded Sean Kemp for Vin Baker, but they were still bona fide. And then despite that, and despite the winning way, the Jazz trade Greg Foster, Chris Morris, and a first-round pick for Ronnie Cicely. Ronnie Cicely was a 6'11", 230-pound center. He had been a top-10 draft pick in the NBA. He had started his career and played 6 years in Miami on expansion teams that were not particularly good teams. He had averaged 17 points and 12 rebounds. So, I mean, he was he was awfully good. He made the playoffs in the 91-92 season for Miami for the first time in that stretch. He averaged 21. They got swept in three games. They made the playoffs in 93-94. He had 8 points and nine rebounds. They lost. So he had not played on a very good team. That was kind of the one question about him, was what happens if he's on a good team? He then went to the Warriors in 94-95 and was a little less productive. His minutes went down as much as anything to 28 minutes. But he was still, you know, decent player, got a little bit more efficient offensively. He then went to Orlando, where he's playing 35 minutes a night. And Orlando was not a great team at that point. They had Shaq. This was, 96, 97. So, no, this is the Shaq, Kobe. Is this right? Let me look and make sure. Not Shaq, Kobe. Shaq, Penny. This is Shaq. Shaq has left. Shaq has gone to L.A. By this point. So, Cicely's replacing Shaq in Orlando. And we get to 97, 98. He's now 32 years old. He's not actually having a good year at all in Orlando. He's shooting 43% from two, by far his worst of his career. He actually might be on a significant downfall. The Jazz, despite rolling, roll the dice to get Ronnie Cicely, and Ronnie Cicely won't come to Utah. So Greg Foster and Chris Morris don't play that game against Charlotte. They warm up. They get pulled off the floor. I was covering the team. I remember it visibly. Greg Foster is totally shaken. Chris Morris is doing a celebration dance because he and Jerry are in last end. I remember talking to both of them. They fly to Orlando. They're now stuck in Orlando as Ronnie Cicely will not report to the Utah Jazz. And as it turns out, Ronnie Cicely does not report to the Utah Jazz. And instead, Ronnie Cicely ends up going back to Orlando, where they end up trading him, I think, later to New Jersey. And the Jazz then move forward with Chris Morris and Greg Foster, who both have pretty darn good playoff runs, frankly, for the Utah Jazz at that point. If you go back in that series against Houston, Greg Foster ends up starting all five games, playing 16 minutes. Chris Morris has one very good game, might have been against the Spurs or the Lakers in the playoffs. But what if Ronnie Cicely had come? We'll dig into that a little bit as we continue and also check on Last Dance a little bit. I didn't think Last Dance last night was as good as the other nights, but maybe I'm getting jilted. Today's show is brought to you in part by Crown Trophy in Ogden. Crown Trophy is the largest award franchise in America. And Matt Lund opened up Crown Trophy in Ogden and now has taken it to like this completely different level. It's incredible. He has 95% customer retention because he just does so many creative things. He does such great work and he delivers it on time. If you're in construction, you need interior signage, electrician has to label all the boxes. He's got amazing laser capabilities, so he does all that. Engraving machine parts, medical devices, aerospace items, traceable markings, guns, pocket knives, tumblers and Yetis, engraving. I think we're going to actually talk about doing a bunch of work with Matt with Locked On. He's advertised with us. But when I talked to Matt, he sold me on just his passion. I love my favorite part of the conversation. I was like, tell me about the business. And kind of, he's like, imagine a world where everyone is ecstatic about what you get them. You do great work. You represent their best things in people's lives. And you do awards. And you basically are personalizing the award so that person feels the appreciation for what they did. The passion he had was so great when it came through. That's what he's done. So he's taken the largest award franchise in America in Crown Trophy and now extrapolated it out into something that does screen printing, heat transfer t-shirts. He now does clips for healthcare professionals on their masks. He does banners, yard size, name tags, all sorts of fabulous things, all the senior yard signs you're seeing around. Just great work, great way to touch the community. Matt's got a great passion for it. If you need any of this type of work, crownogden@gmail.com, crownogden on Facebook, or call Matt at 801-621-2055. That's 801-621-2055. So what if Ronnie Cicely had said, you bet? I don't know that it actually would have worked. There's a few reasons why, in retrospect, the Jazz might have dodged the bullet. One is Ronnie Cicely had this terrible year. He'd gone from being a 51% shooter to a 43% shooter, kind of out of nowhere in Orlando. He then ends up getting traded to New Jersey. He plays 9 games for the Nets, and the year after, he only plays 9 more games. Ronnie Cicely's body might have completely broken down, and we saw, and that was the end of his kind of run. His rim shooting, which is what Cicely was, he had great footwork, he was creative around the basket. His rim shooting had slipped from 56 to 49% that year. He may have just lost his lift and lost his legs, and the Jazz actually dodged a bullet. The year before, in 74 games, Ronnie Cicely had 90 dunks. In the year he was with the Magic that last year, in 56 games, he only had 25 dunks. He'd gone from 10% of his field goals being dunk attempts to 5% of his field goals being dunked. Every indicator shows that his legs might have fallen apart. The Orlando Magic were 9 points worse per 100 possessions with him on the floor than they were with him off the floor. The year prior, they were -1. He had never been a good plus-minus player. But that year in Orlando, he was just awful. And the Jazz were trying to find a center, another offensive force. Anquan Carr was a tiny bit older, beginning to maybe show his age a little bit along the way. In his 13th year in the NBA at that point, you know, there was a real concern on the big dog at 36 years old. And there was a concern whether Greg Foster was good enough, and 24-year-old Greg Ostertag was reliable. The deal made total sense. It seemed to supply the Jazz with the last answer that they needed. But the fact is, Ronnie Cicely might have been done, and it's easier to look at it retrospectively. Now, at the time, I remember kind of doing the analysis and wondering, well, maybe he's just lost interest and he's not that into it. And maybe he knew the whole time. If you go back and look at the playoff series, the Jazz beat the Rockets in five. And in that series, Greg Foster starts all five, as I mentioned. And Greg Ostertag plays more minutes than Foster. He's okay. And Anquan Carr wasn't great. Like, you probably could have used, like, in that opening series, that three-headed monster, all of the things you were worried about kind of came to fruition. Anquan Carr shot 39%. Greg Ostertag was probably the best of the group, but we just did, you know, you didn't know if you could rely on Greg at 26 minutes. Anquan Carr only played 12 minutes a game in that series. So if you go back and look at that first series where the Jazz get through in the fifth game of a five-game series against the Rockets and Akeem, why they needed that trade makes all the sense in the world. Now, when they go play the Spurs and David Robinson, I mean, this is, you're really needing a center. Greg Foster gets the five starts. He's a little bit better. He shoots 44%. Anquan Carr is a better series. But then Greg Ostertag was like a non-factor in that series. He took 10 shots the entire time. He played 13 minutes. He did have some rebounds. But they suddenly relied on Foster and Carr much more. And then you had Shaq. And this is why you felt like you needed a center. By the end of this thing, you know, in the sweep over Shaq, it's Greg Foster again, who's making all the plays. Anquan Carr's doing very little, shooting 42%. And it's Ostertag and Foster that are battling. So the Jazz just used this three-headed monster. And maybe in some sense, that actually turned out better, that they needed to have this three-headed monster to be able to figure things out. Last piece today, Michael Jordan, Last Dance. A few interesting notes for you. I thought there were a few notes on that show. Locked On NBA did a post-game show on it. It's terrific, so make sure you grab that. The Space Jam games looked amazing. Last week's conversation about what a total jerk Michael was and teammates and what we really want out of him is interesting. It's interesting, I think, a longer discussion, maybe we'll do it tomorrow, on the idea that he got, you know, the secret suspension, and how it's like, even the minute you hear a conspiracy theory, you're just, they're irrefutable, or that's not a word, but it's hard to refute them. Once you have them in your head, even myself hearing that, I was like, yeah, I don't really believe them. You know, winning has a price was, I think, the huge theme of this one. Some things on Scottie Pippen. We'll talk about him tomorrow. We'll dig in a little bit more on Last Dance. Go listen to Locked On NBA. They did a post-game show to it. There's a lot of good stuff, and then we'll build off that tomorrow as we continue with our what ifs. Another person not wanting to come to Utah will be our focus tomorrow. And if you have some for us throughout the week, feel free to share them with us at dlock09@gmail.com. The first what if maybe is a case of the Jazz getting lucky. It is Locked On Jazz. Right now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA.